Hello and welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, World 10-6. I am your host, Sean Nola Kirkland, and with me as usual is Robert Desert Eagle Allen.
Yes, sir.
Blue Swim.
Hey, that's me.
And Jeremy Lamont.
Where am I? Hi, guys.
You're in the beehive.
I didn't even see you there.
Yeah, you might want to watch those bees. If it's a hive big enough for you to get into it, they're probably some pretty gnarly bees.
I probably killed a lot of them in Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon.
Might be okay. I was referencing Utah.
Utah?
The Deseret State.
It is that state.
Yes.
Industry,
but isn't the official, I don't know, what monument, like a beehive or?
Yes, we actually have a big beehive right in the middle, and we all go and visit. No, actually, the bee is the state insect, and actually, on our state flag, we have many wives, actually. So,
same as Saudi Arabia, I hear.
It's true. Here in California, they're trying to pass a law to make it legal for any old body to have their beehive in their backyard. So, get ready for too many bees in California.
Weren't the bees all committing mass suicide a couple of years ago?
That's still going on.
We're not going to have any bees in 10 years, aren't we?
Nope. Anyway, let's bring up this energy of the show. So you might have heard that Sage is not with us this week. She is at the premiere of her movie called Movie.
I heard she's in rehab.
She was sacrificed to the podcasting god so we could record tonight.
No, she really is at the premiere of her movie, which I don't know what it's called. I'm a terrible friend for not knowing, but she should have sent me a press release or something. So it's your fault now, Sage. So we're just going to jump right into what we've been playing with Deagle.
Okay.
Deagle, what have you been playing?
Well, the first game I've been playing, it's a bit of an oldie, but I feel it got overlooked despite it coming from a publishing powerhouse. So let me talk about Need for Speed the Run for a minute or two. The runs. So first is the game's intro. Let me tell you, it's really bad, and it does the title a disservice. The game, it sets up a decent little narrative about the protagonist. I forgot his name. You know, kind of cool looking young guy. He gets into gambling debt with some shady characters, and then to cancel the debt, he needs to race from San Francisco, New York, Cannonball Run style. No Dom DeLuise, but the plot, it's not going to win any awards, but, you know, for a racing game, you know, it's enough to get by. And the bad part that I mentioned, the first driving sequence, it's this 2-minute sequence, which ends with you trying to beat a train across the tracks. So the first three times I smashed into the damn thing and thought, wow, this game's really garbage. Now, part of the problem is that the game's physics modeling, it isn't arcadey. It's a step away from, say, Burnout. It is simple, but there is a little bit of nuance. It requires a little bit of finesse. By that, I mean you need to handbrake, around turns. And if you handbrake too much or too little, you can really screw things up. However, once you learn it, which probably takes about 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a little bit longer, past the time of that intro, it does feel solid, and it gives the game, just that slight realistic feel. So that, and coupled with some of the different events, you're passing cars in these sprint races, you have to beat a specific car, a competitor. There's checkpoint races. There's one, which I like, the competitions where you can't wreck your car, despite you're being chased by this gang of aggressors there. So I'm digging it, and I thought it kind of got overlooked by the media, and I think for anyone that's a fan of driving games, it's racing games, it's worth checking out. And a gorgeous gorgeous engine. Of course it shows the beauty of our country as you go from one side to the other, but there's little touches like birds or jets flying in the sky, stuff like that. That's kind of cool. You can tell that they spent 3 years making it.
So how many stages are there as you go across the country there? Is it like there's an ice level and a lava level? And
there is snow levels, of course, lava. I haven't gone to Hawaii.
No lava in the Midwest?
No. I haven't seen any tornadoes or any things like that. But there is a lot of environmental and sometimes exaggerated environmental conditions there. I don't know the number of stages. They kind of... The game's good enough so you don't get caught up in counting the numbers. You're always looking at, you know, what's coming next. You're always, you're trying to beat a number of opponents. There's kind of a countdown to number one, and that is kind of the overarching, that's, I guess, the meta game between the little, you know, sections. And you're, you know, so kind of obsessed with that and coming in first that you kind of forget how many stages there are.
But so is it like one score that you're aiming? I mean, how
yeah, exactly? you're trying to come in first. So just, you're... What, 200?
Like cumulatively, or?
Yeah, you're 200th, and every section you move up 10, 12, sometimes 6, you know, points. 6 spots within the race counter. And your goal is to come in first.
See, for me, kind of
like becoming the number one most wanted in Need for Speed Most Wanted, where you're kind of working your way up through the game trying to become the number one on the list.
Trying to remember Need for Speed Most Wanted. Yeah, I think so, from what I recall. I've played so many Need for Speed games, they're kind of a blur now. Blur, see what I did there? But I dig it, and it's $20 right now. So, cool.
That's a good deal.
So, any other questions?
Yeah, actually, sure. I was kind of wondering also about, like, is it like a combat racing, or is it, I mean, are you grinding people off the sides of buildings and things like that? Or?
Sadly, no, it's pretty straight up racing. There's nothing like that. There is no offensive. There's just kind of defensive driving. Those one races where people are trying to crash your cars. So no weapons. You do pull into gas stations, and for some reason you can get new cars there. And there's where you get the downloadable vehicles, which I haven't bought, and I don't think they're necessary.
And there are,
There are
on foot sections as well where you get. I mean, yeah, people are chasing you though, right?
Yeah, kind of quick times sections there, which aren't the best, and probably they give a break from racing, but I don't know if they're really needed. They just
need a break from racing in a racing game.
You know what they should do? They should just have some loading screens at those gas stations where you're just kind of like filling up, just kind of tapping your foot and waiting around, going for a candy bar.
Yeah, you're deciding what you want from the vending machine.
You get the bathroom key that's on the big plank, you know. And...
try to keep your hands clean. Try not to touch anything when you go in the gas station bathroom.
I mean, that's the true American experience right there.
Right, yeah. Clean bathrooms. Clean gas station bathroom. They're hard.
Oh, yeah. The land of the free.
So coming up next, put a few moments into Sniper Elite V2, and just want to tell the listeners we won't be doing a full review because 505 didn't send us a copy, but I'll be giving reports over the next podcast or two. Now this
is the most violent game ever made.
Trying to think. It's up there, but sometimes I think violence, I don't know, where you're seeing parts just ripped across the screen and you know, you're seeing, you know, guts all over the place. Let me get to that. Now first, the game isn't for everyone. It has this casual difficulty level, which I don't understand, because it means you don't have to worry about bullet drop or wind. But this is a game that's not going to have any interest for a casual gamer at all. And so I don't even understand why that's there besides a back of a box, you know, selling point. Instead, the beauty is you know, in the physics handling, which occurs at the next difficulty level. There's three, which requires you to either read the mil dot scope, or alternatively you pull the left trigger down, and then there you hold your breath and you calm your body. So doing that, it puts this red cursor on the screen, and this cursor, it tells you exactly where to shoot. It diminishes in size, and you know, there it shows how to compensate for drop, for wind, for elevation. Now the thing is, and the tricky part is, if you get into a firefight or you're shot, that sends adrenaline through your body, so that makes it harder to focus, so it negates, you know, whatever benefit you have. So you have to keep things in balance. You know you got to plan your shots and not miss. And when stuff does go wrong, and it will, that's when the game doesn't hold together, and that's when it turns into a really kind of subpar shooter. Both in navigating the environment, like climbing around and, you know, finding those good sniper shots, and shooting anything but your rifle, it feels really clunky. You know, those firefights when you are trying to fool an enemy sniper to take a shot so that you can just see this brief glare of a scope, those to me make it all worthwhile. Now, Sean, you were talking about the violence in the game. And I don't know. I was thinking about that, you know, if it's gratuitous or not. And the one thing is, you know, the reward for a really good shot is gore. You see the bullet entering the body. You see the effect on the enemy. You see the bullet, you know, deformation. You even see, like, exit wounds where it comes out, you know, the back of the head, all that. And all this is shown in really vivid detail because you're given this X-ray cam, which tracks the trajectory of the bullet all in slow motion. And it's clear Rebellion. They put a lot of time in here because it is, you know, it's pretty graphic. And it looks really, you know, really painful. And the sound effects, you know, that accompany that are really impressive, because if you play with the sound down, it just doesn't have that same visceral impact. But, you know, watching a bullet go straight through someone's skull at 1,000 yards, it really needs some kind of payoff. And I think in this case, maybe I'm a sicko, but it's justified.
I didn't say it wasn't justified. I'm just okay. Telling you what they're calling it.
Okay. But as far as the most violent game, I don't know.
I want Rebellion to come back in a big way, because I love the first Aliens versus Predator.
On Jaguar?
Sorry, the second Alien versus Predator. I mean, the one on Jaguar is nothing to sneeze at. That was the reason I have a Jaguar, but...
No, you know, Tempest 2000 says low, or Tempest.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
So two reasons to have one.
So I have a question.
What was the little animal, the shmup with the animal? What was that?
I don't think I played that one. I played
that wasn't
Aliens vs. Predator, Kasumi Ninja, what else? Tempest 2000, and Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, and Caveman, whatever.
We just took a veer off Jaguar Road. Yeah. Sorry, Jerry.
No, there's one question I have about this hyper-violent money shot thing that happens.
Yeah,
is that,
that's a good name for it.
Yeah, is it dynamic? I mean, is it procedurally generated based on the shot, or is it like a cutscene or something?
No. It's all when you shoot different parts of the body, you'll get different achievements or trophies depending on the platform you're playing, and the person reacts in a different way. So you can theoretically, and I've seen the bullet hit a bone and kind of veer off a little bit, and you know, go in a different direction there.
Yeah, I saw one, I think, that, like, he shot him in the stomach, and it got all twisted up in his intestines and
spun around there a few times. Yeah, which one of the things I'd like to see is like, smaller arms fire, because supposedly when you do that, you know, the bigger mass bullets, they'll go straight through a person. But sometimes the smaller arms fire, they're actually worse, because they'll hit something, and then they'll start spinning around, and that creates, you know, a deeper point of impact there. And that kind of drills away at a person.
They should have like a DLC blunderbuss or something like that, where the, you know, the bullet just
accurate to 30 feet.
Well, and the reason I ask is because I was thinking about, you know, I don't know if you remember Blitz the League a few years ago, Blitz the League 2 exploding testicles.
I don't remember the exploding.
You don't remember the exploding.
Jesus, how did that slip my mind?
I don't know, but I was wondering if you could explode people's testicles in this.
No, you get points for shooting them in the groin, and that's a chivo. Yeah.
Wow.
Of course it is.
Yeah. So go for the groin. Last thing on that is I've been playing is the Jack and Daxter HD collection, which I'm really enjoying. I know there's this mounting backlash online that's asking if every PS2 collection needs to be up-resed. And I think that's an important question. Obviously, the answer is no. But in this case, you have a trio of games which really flaunt Naughty Dog's energy, their creative juices here, both in the character and level design, and that kind of Saturday morning inspired aesthetic, which is really cool. And it's hard not to recommend the anthology here. Jack and Dexter, to me, they never hit the same highs that, say, Ratchet and Clank did. What is the one I'm thinking of? Deadlocked aside. Sean, I think we talked about that one before. That was kind of the stepchild of the franchise. But the games, they still hold up. They remain really fun. For me, much like the old Spyro games,
Yeah, those games are great.
Yeah, yeah. They still have that charm. They didn't age as much as a lot of other games. And because the games were pretty graphically proficient to begin with, the move to HD is kind of subtle, much like the Sly Cooper collection. And the obvious improvement, of course, is the move to a widescreen output. You know, and it doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't stretch anything out, so it does look good on a HD TV. The textures, I didn't, you know, seemed a little cleaned up, but nothing amazing. I compared it to the older games, but at a little over $13 a piece, I could easily recommend it to platform and action fans to check the games out, especially if they've only played maybe one game in the series. Sadly, the kart racer, which was actually pretty cool, didn't make the cut.
Oh, I was going to ask that.
Yeah.
I think, sorry, to get back to your point when you first introduced the game about people being upset about, you know, does every game need an HD remaster?
Mm-hmm.
I think the Devil May Cry series kind of brought that discussion to the forefront.
Well, I don't think it's so much of that. It's just that I think as far as Sony first-party games go, mm-hmm. when they bring out Jak and Daxter HD and Sly Cooper HD and what was the other HD collection they put out?
Ico.
Yeah, you know, they put out all these HD remasters, and they've still got less than 10 PS2 classics up there. I think it kind of makes people concerned that they're just kind of abandoning that goodwill thing that they did. You know, because, I mean, it's great to have Grim Grimoire and...
What do you mean, goodwill thing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something people ask for, and they finally put it out there, and then they didn't support it.
Hmm.
Okay. So here's another question. So I never really played Jak and Daxter, and I was much more of a Ratchet and Clank guy, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of wondering, I've sort of, you know, been giving this thing side eye, kind of looking at it from across the room. Is this for somebody who's never played? I mean, is this the kind of thing that you'd really recommend that a new person to that franchise?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, check it out. You know, if you have a PS3, it looks good. You know, they're fun games. They're well engineered. Level design is great. You know. Naughty Dog, they were coming after the Crash Bandicoot series, and to me the first one wasn't really that fun, but I think, you know, for me at least, the second and third ones really kind of came into their own as platformers, and this one, you know, of course transports them in a full 3D world, and but, you know, I have a lot of fun with them, so I'd recommend it if you know, even mildly interested in platformers, to check it out.
But no Kart Racer.
No Kart Racer.
Okay, we'll have to wait for the Kart Racer HD remix to come out, I guess.
Yeah. Which is kind of a bummer.
I mean, it's should kind of do like a tongue-in-cheek, kind of an ironic, like, here are all the weird Kart Racers that have come out over the years. Then they should just do it like Kart Racer. Yeah, exactly. Why
like
not do that? That'd be awesome.
Or do the Smash Brothers of Kart Racers. Just say, like, oh, okay, everybody who had some sort of bullshit knockoff Kart Racer over the past three generations, yes. Give us the rights to those Kart Racers, and we'll do, like, a crossover Sony, Sega, Disney.
Smash Brothers.
Just everything but Nintendo stuffed into a Kart Racer. Star Wars.
Wasn't there a Sega game that had the Hornet from Daytona USA as a fighting character?
Yeah, so...
Yeah, the Sonic Fighter one. No, it was the Sonic one, wasn't it? Sonic Jam? Not Sonic Jam.
Sonic R?
Sonic the Fighters.
Oh, Sonic the Fighters.
Was it Sonic the Fighters? Okay.
It was. It could have been one of the Virtua Fighters, but I'm pretty sure it was Sonic.
Oh, it was Fighters Mega Mix.
Fighters Mega Mix.
That makes more sense, yep.
Yeah. Didn't it have Pepsi Man, too? Which I think is the name of one of our readers.
No, Pepsi Man was a special character in... something Sony, because Pepsi and Sony had some sort of marketing agreement.
I'm almost sure it was Sega.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think I've seen that Pepsi Man game or something like that in my travels of secondhand stores. That
sounded you should have bought it. It's worth money.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
It probably is crap, but it's worth money.
It's supposed to be pretty good, which is why it's worth money, because it's like this weird... I don't think you could straight up buy it.
Hmm. Does it outdo Spot for Genesis? The 7-Up game? Spot Goes to Hollywood.
The first one was so good. Spot Goes to Hollywood was meh. Yeah. The first one was good.
What was the first one called? Just Spot?
Cool Spot, I think.
Cool Spot, that's right.
Cool Spot, yeah.
Was that David Perry?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
I actually played that at a friend's house before I got a Sega Genesis and thought it was so cool. Mm-hmm. And I asked for... They had Spot for Game Boy. And I begged for that. And I finally got it. And it was Othello.
Wow. Now, my question is, I wonder, well, this is pre-internet, if anyone was speaking out and saying this is shrill marketing, because when the not the gummy bears, what was the reason why? What was the recent
Sour Patch.
When the Sour Patch Kids came out, everyone was saying, "Oh, that's kind of shrill and, you know, not a very
whatever." If Uncharted came out, except instead of Uncharted, it was called Drake's Pepsi Subway? Adventure or something. Yes, Subway Eat Right. You know, but it's the same game. It just had Subway shit in it, and it cost $10 less. I'd be okay with it.
You would.
I'm just saying. I think Capcom. From what I understand, Capcom made a perfectly good platformer.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't cost them that much to make because it was sponsored, and it came out for $5.
That's true. I what was MotorStorm was sponsored by what, Kia or some automobile?
Jeez. Oh, Scion.
That really paid off. Because I didn't even remember the manufacturer.
You know what didn't pay off? Yaris.
Oh, no.
That was a bad game. But...
you know what? But you'll always remember Yaris.
Yeah.
Yaris versus Yaris.
That's going to be a textbook marketing failure. Keith said.
I don't know. Yaris versus Yaris, you remember it. I mean, I don't know how many people bought Yaris.
I think Yaris shit. Just because of the game. Now, I've never driven one.
I drove one. I wanted a Yaris when I got out of college, but didn't happen.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I just have one thing to say. Yo Noid forever.
Yes, but I mean, seriously, think about it. Think of all the NES games that were like corporate
corporate shit.
I played a ton of MC Kids or Global Gladiators. I played a ton.
Hell
of that
yeah, that game. Okay. Well, we're getting into another territory, so why don't we get back on track?
That needs to be a topic for another podcast. We need to talk about that in more detail.
Yes.
These are questions. Listener questions.
Let me pass the torch to Sean Ola.
I have been playing as much Vita as I can possibly get because I'm not the type of guy who buys consoles at launch. But I bought the Vita at launch, and now it's one of those things that I'm trying so hard not to have buyer's remorse. So
I was just going to say, I can smell regret.
Yeah, I played Star Drone Extreme. I played Star Drone Extreme, which is okay. But it's definitely one of those things that when the first time we got our hands on a Vita, it was one of the pre-release dev units, and it was a slider model.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like a really big PlayStation or PSP Go.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that they developed this game on that. It's entirely touchscreen controls, and there's a lot of it's dragging and holding. Well, you said played it on that.
I played it on the PS3, but why not give the option?
No, wait. Let's back up here. So what is this? So this game is like a flingy, spinny. Tell us what is the game before we get into some of that stuff.
So basically the way it works, and I'm going to do this entirely from the touchscreen perspective because I haven't played it on the PS3, but basically what you do is you've got this your little drone and you set it in motion and you have to collect stars and get to a goal. And you got to kind of guide it through this maze without touching the walls, basically. But you never have direct control of the drone. It just goes forward, and then there are points that when you get close enough to them, you hold the point, and it'll get caught in the gravitational field of that point and kind of spin around it, and you can kind of change its direction and its trajectory. So from my opinion...
Wait, you can change trajectory?
Well, because you're spinning around in a circle, so you're...
Oh, when you let go, you change.
Yeah, when you let go, it'll fling it in whatever direction it was headed.
Okay.
So from my perspective, it's hard to think of how you would do that with a controller. The problem is there's no good way to hold the Vita.
It was real simple. You just move the analog stick in the direction to start it off, and then you hit the button, and that sends it on its way. And then you hit the button, and that would pick the nearest point, the little grab point, and that was it.
But like there'll be areas where they're close enough together where there really isn't a close enough one, and you want to pick one over the other.
That's right. So there was some problems with that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You're right.
So there's definitely more control this way. But the problem is you hold it like you normally hold it, you can't really reach the center of the screen comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hold it sideways, then all of a sudden you can't see the timer and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just really not comfortable to hold it that way.
Do you ever worry about dropping the whole $250 thing?
Sometimes,
yeah. That would just I couldn't even play the game because I'd be so concerned about dropping the whole fucking thing.
It's inexpensive though, right? It's like $3 or $4 bucks.
Did The game? Yeah, it was $4.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's worth it for that. I definitely played through it. It's an easy... there's no platinum to get, but if there was a platinum, it'd be easy to get.
Now, Sean, one of the things with the PS3 version, I had a hard time just getting through it. I played about 6 levels, and I felt like the level design didn't really offer much more. Sure, you know, there were little tricks and stuff to do. But after you get to, like, the flower where you collect things in the 8 corners, and then you come back to the center...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It never really progressed for me.
Later levels are much more complicated. The problem with that game is, some of the puzzles do get kind of samey towards the end. And the real trick to getting through it and getting the trophies is not skipping levels. Because, like, every 5th level is excruciatingly difficult.
Right.
And then it'll go back to be easy again. And
you know why that is, right?
Where you're like, well, if I'm going to play through this and get the trophy for completing everything, I have to beat this one level. And it does. Like, the first time you die, it's like, you want to skip this level? You can skip this level if you want. This level's really hard. Just skip it.
Wait. To skip a level, I thought it cost 99 cents. You have to buy the DLC.
No.
Yeah, they have a level.
It was that way originally, and then they changed it. They updated the store, and then they made it free.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was nice.
It's always been like that since I played it, so I guess I did it after whatever patch.
So here's one more question. Did anybody, I understand this is also, there's a PS3 version of this as well. Did anybody play the console version of this? I mean, it sounds like part of the problem is the interface, right?
Deagle played the PS3 version.
I did
that's
a
what we're
video
talking
review
about.
Of that. Yeah. It was, now I think about it, there was a little bit of a problem when selecting, when there were multiple nearby gravitational points.
Mm-hmm.
But for me... I don't know. It wasn't enough, you know, of a problem to taint the game. To me, the big problem was it just felt samey. And there wasn't a lot of articulation over the thing. It was just like, I'm constantly spinning, I'm grabbing this. And that was all there was to it. So it felt like a really kind of old game. Even though it was graphically impressive, it just felt really simple.
Well, my problem with it, too, is that the menus felt like they weren't finished. If that makes any sense. Like, when you select things... It didn't animate, so you wouldn't necessarily, and there was a little bit of a lag to it, so you wouldn't necessarily know if you selected something, and that was super irritating.
That's weird.
Yeah. But that started on Extreme. It's I don't know, it's a $4 game. I guess it's worth $4. But also played Mutant Blob Attacks. That game is worth $20, and it's only 8, I think. That is a good game.
That is
great
good.
Music, great character, great levels. It's one of the best final levels I've played in a long time.
I'm super excited for Drinkbox's next game. Have you seen that?
I have. I don't remember it because I remember going on their website.
You're a luchador?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
You're a luchador. What more do you need to know? It's by Drinkbox.
And it's a platformer. And it's
D. But no, that game, I don't want to spoil it, but the whole, you basically hit the point where you're at the end where you're like, oh, wow, this game is weird. And then it's all of a sudden like way over the top weird. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, the hands down best final level of a game I've played in a really long time.
Did you like the homage?
Which homage?
I don't want to spoil it or anything. To an older game system?
That thing is full of references.
I don't remember specifically which one you're talking about. We'll talk about it after the show.
Okay.
I mean, Sean, I'd like you to talk again a little bit about what the game is, because I think it you know, Mutant Blob Attacks. I think it's a great game, and I really like it. But I think it's the kind of thing that people tend to overlook because they're like, oh, Blob Attacks, and they may not understand what it is. So talk a little bit about the game.
We talked about a Blob, which is the first game on the podcast a couple episodes ago. But basically, about Mutant Blob Attacks is the sequel to About a Blob, which is a platformer, kind of very, I don't like saying physics based because all platformers are physics based,
mm-hmm.
but definitely relies on you know, certain weight of the blob. You basically go around, you eat stuff by running it over it, and then you know, the more you eat, the bigger you get, the bigger things you can eat, and so on and so forth, until by the end of the game you're giant, you're eating, you know, buildings and all sorts of other crap. But you start out like the size of a pin, and you're eating like dust molecules and stuff, and you just grow as the game goes on. I don't want to say like Katamari Damacy, because it's not as open as that. There's definitely a level progression
structure
in this. Which I think I kind of like.
yeah.
But it's I don't know. There's something about it. It's just got this really fun character to it. It's very simple. The story is just you are a blob, you are angry, and you're eating stuff. And it's, I don't know, it's great. I love it. Like I said, my favorite part of the game is the end, and I can't spoil that, but it's so worth it. It's get that game.
How much was it again?
$8.
Wow, that's probably the best deal for Vita right now.
Yeah, hands down.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one, and a lot of people say, you know, it's the best game you can get for the Vita. It's, I mean, I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, but it is. I mean, it's one of those things where I consistently, when I see people, they're like, I don't know about this blob game everyone's talking about, but then they play it, and everybody, almost without exception, says, "Wow, I'm really glad I played this."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's they added some touchscreen stuff for the Vita.
That's right. Yeah.
And it really works, you know.
Platforms and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of gimmicky. It's basically just you're rearranging stuff on the screen, but it works. You know, it doesn't feel out of place or anything. Mm-hmm. So I would get that. There's nothing wrong with that game.
There is one small thing. There was one level. I forgot where it was. And for some reason, the color coding, there was a tunnel, and I couldn't see where the tunnel was. So I just kept trying to go back, and I did that about 10 times.
I think I know which one you're talking
about. It's on the very left side, and you usually go, you know, you kind of go down.
Oh, it's the part with those lasers, right?
Yes,
yes. It's cannons, and you have to use the cannons to get up to the platform, and then you try and jump on it. Yeah, I spent like an hour on that because I'm trying to jump on the cannons.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm almost making it all the way back because I figure you take a key and then you go back, but it's right above you if you guys know what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's funny. We both got stuck there. So, yeah, that's relatively minor.
That's one small part, though. So but listeners, if you haven't played it yet and you get stuck at this part with two cannons over a bed of spikes, you don't have to go over the bed of spikes. There's a tunnel right above you.
Unless you're thick-headed like Sean and I are.
Yeah.
We'll spend an hour.
Yep. What else? And then I played a lot of Monster Hunter.
Yay.
Which I turned the second analog stick off, and it's so much better without that stupid analog stick. Mm. So Monster Hunter, it's great. I'm playing it so that when Blue starts playing it, I can be like, hey, how you like a Monster Hunter? I'm better than you.
Sean, Dragon's Dogma, what do you think?
I haven't played it yet. I haven't downloaded it on my PS3. But like I said, I've been playing my Vita at every chance I get because I don't want to feel bad about owning that.
That's your homework. I'm curious what you'll think about that.
What I saw of it at E3 last year looked really cool.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Other than that, I've been playing Castlevania Symphony of the Night because I never played more than half an hour of it before, and it's something I can do when my girlfriend's studying and doesn't distract her. And it's good, but I think if you didn't play it when it was new, it does not feel like the best Castlevania game ever, like everybody says it is.
Yeah, no, I dropped out in like 15 minutes. I couldn't take it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where my first modern Castlevania experience was Circle of the Moon. And
on DS?
Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
And so I played that, and I played Portrait of Ruin, and what was it, Aria of Sorrow or whatever.
Yes.
So going back to Symphony of the Night, you know, which started all that, I can definitely see where it's good, but it's so... it's such an early PlayStation game. I hate how every time I die, I have to go through the game over screen, and then...
I was doing that sliding around, and like some bone skeleton got like a lucky hit, and I'm back at the beginning. I said, screw this. I turned the thing off. I never went back.
Yeah, and one part that I'm still convinced I'm at the wrong part of the game, and I'm just cheating it. But it's basically I got this thing that transforms you into a wolf, and when you get the wolf thing, you can do this sort of running jump that gets you a little bit farther than your jump. And there's this part where all these platforms are falling down and you can't get across it. But if you're the dog and you do a running jump from the staircase, you can kind of jump over that part. And then if you keep your momentum, you can kind of skip across all the way to the edge of that room. But then you need double jump in the next room, which I don't have yet. Mm. But I cannot for the life of me figure out where to go next. And I don't know. It's frustrating. But I mean, that's what modern Castlevania games are about.
Do you have the glasses?
I have sunglasses.
Okay.
I've gotten a better... do sunglasses do anything other than lower your intelligence?
Well, there is... I haven't played it in years, but there's a set of glasses. And I don't want to... We'll talk about this too. But if you use the glasses at a certain point in the castle, it changes the game radically.
Oh, no. I know which part you're talking about.
Yeah. But I never... I had to look that up. How in the hell was I supposed to figure that out?
Yeah. So anyway, moral of the story is Portrait of Ruin is better. I don't care what you people say.
Have you tried Dracula X Chronicles on the PSP?
I have not yet. That's one of the things, is that since I already own Symphony of the Night, I'm like, I don't want to pay $15 for this when I already own $5 of it.
I just love the napalm jars.
I'm digging the knife.
You're one of those, huh?
I'm knife machine gun guy.
Mm. I love just seeing the damage, you know, the steady damage roll off a character.
Yeah. But that's pretty much all I've been playing. We can talk about Walking Dead once we hear from everybody else, but I want to hear what Blue's been playing.
Well, for me, my PSP has been getting pretty much a ton of use out of Persona 3 Portable. That has been my evening relaxation, play it till the PSP battery dies game for the last couple of months, really, and I'm starting to...
It's been at least a year now.
I haven't even had my PSP a year.
And yet you've been playing Persona 3 Portable for 6 years.
I've been putting the UMD in my mouth and playing it with my mind. But, yeah, I'm getting closer to towards the end. I'm just at the beginning of January 2010, and there's like about 2 or 3 more months to go in the game, as far as I can tell, because you can't scroll any further in the calendar. And it's, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, because Jeremy, I know you're going to play it at some point.
I've got it on my Vita.
Have you tried it yet?
I tried like the first 5 minutes.
Oh, come on. Just 5 minutes?
No, wait. You can't oh come on him. Let's talk about Monster Hunter. How much of that did you play?
No, listen. Hey, I've got Monster Hunter on there, too. And you know how much I play to that?
5 minutes.
How about the first 5 minutes, yeah.
I've played about 45 minutes of Monster Hunter. I've got the dual pack that GameStop has as an exclusive with Freedom 2 and Freedom Unite.
Which,
I think it is.
Say what a dumb idea that is. Just that, right. I was thinking about it when you said it, because like that doesn't make sense. And I looked it up, and you're right. It's Freedom 2 and Freedom Unite. Which Freedom Unite is basically the Game of the Year edition of Freedom 2.
I mean, it's I haven't been far enough to really notice any difference between the two. I've only messed around with both of them for I think 45 minutes with Freedom 2, and then I'm going to mess around with that since I can export a good portion of my character to Freedom Unite.
I would stop and just skip straight to Freedom Unite, because Freedom Unite is Monster Hunter Freedom 2 with all the downloadable content they released, plus content from the first game, plus you get a companion character.
Oh. Well, in that case...
There are a few games that are like that too, and I think that's for people like me. Like, I have a really hard time, and Blue remembers, like, when I was trying to figure out which Persona I wanted to get, everybody was like, no, get Persona 3, and I was like, but there's 1 and 2, I've got to play 1 and 2, and everyone's like, no, don't bother with 1 and 2, just go to 3, they're not even connected, no, I just can't do it. Same thing with Monster Hunter, like, I have a really hard time, like, oh, this is like Monster Hunter, like, the fourth game, like, am I going to be missing out on all those other monsters? Or...
Yeah, let me tell you, you give Sean Persona 1, and he writes off the whole series.
I played 3. I just
no. Didn't I give you 1?
You gave me 1 and 3. Okay. I've got press copies of both of those.
There was
and
a
I'm
while.
Pretty sure you're the only one who gives me those.
Yeah, probably. There was a while where I was pushing JRPGs down Sean's throat, like with wild abandon.
If they would like, do something new and interesting, I'd love them again. But they're not. So Wild Arms 5 will continue to be the last one I ever loved.
He'll never marry again.
Well, if they come out with Wild Arms 6, I'll get all orgasmically excited again. But
yeah, that's really what I've been playing lately. I've just been focusing on trying to get through Persona 3 Portable, so I can just say I have one of these epic length RPGs done, finished, out of the backlog.
Can you just lock yourself in a room and do it over the weekend?
At the point I'm at, I probably could, but I mean, conservative estimates for the, you know, for playing the main campaign front to back is like 70 hours or so. It's supposed to be like a 70 hour RPG, and then you have the 30 hour the answer bonus content in Persona 3 Fest,
mm-hmm.
the re-release. But I mean, I'm like 120 hours into that thing, and I still have a couple of months to go in it. I've just
then you gotta jump with the other character.
Yeah, the
in the new game plus option.
Oh God. Earth Defense Force, you're going to definitely have some company in the 200 hours mark. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Jeremy, you really got to play it. It's really, yep. really good.
I really want to. Like, it's kind of funny whenever we have, you know, when on podcasts, when people have like the what you've been playing segments, I am jealous of everything that everybody else is playing. And I'm playing my own stuff, but I'm just like, oh, Monster Hunter. Like, and I'm like flirting with like the idea of, you know, all these people who are like, oh, yeah, I play Monster Hunter on my PSP or whatever. Like, we should just like get like Monster Hunter nights going. And I'm like, no, I don't have the time for that. Or, or you know, Persona, like, oh, I've got like three different Persona games here. And I haven't started any of them. And the only time I ever try and play them is when I'm like in my bed and I last like literally that's like the 5 minutes and I just pass out. And I don't want that to reflect poorly on the games. It's just a question of the time.
No, I get it. Yeah. I'm the same way with British TV, to be perfectly honest. There's something about British shows that just put me to sleep. I'll enjoy them. Sherlock, I've seen the beginning and end of every Sherlock episode. I've never seen the middle.
And Doctor Who, I'm sure it's the same.
Mr. Bean?
Doctor Who, I just don't like.
Jeremy, we're changing your name from Lawman to 5 minutes.
Yeah, I guess that's me. That's all I need. That's all.
Five minute man.
I will say to both of you, since you're both kind of getting started with Monster Hunter, if you don't have something like a commute or some sort of time of day when you're going to spend an hour just sitting there, it's kind of hard to get into, because it's kind of the beauty of that game is that in 1 hour you can do a quest and then do all the in-between quest stuff, and then you kind of reset the cycle. And so basically I do that every day. I get on the bus, I run a quest, I go to the farm, I go to my kitchen, I sleep, and then I'm at work.
Man.
And then when I get back on the bus in the afternoon, I have time to do another quest, do the farm, do the kitchen, go to sleep. And
what a life.
Yeah, I know. And it sounds really repetitive and boring, but it's one of those things that, okay, there's that level to it, and there's the weapon and armor building level to it, and then there's the quest level thing to it. So it's like you have all these goals that you set up for yourself that you kind of eat away at little by little. But it's one of those things that it's hard to just sit down at home when you can do anything else in the world and just play Monster Hunter.
Well, I did a Monster Hunter try on my Wii, and it's not even open yet. Like, I'm in love with the idea of maybe playing Monster Hunter, but I never actually do it.
Yeah, I this is the unpopular opinion in America, but I think Freedom Unite is the best Monster Hunter game. Having played all the ones that you released in the West, I definitely think it's better than Try. Try's easier, and you progress a lot faster, but it's some of the character is gone, and I hate the cha-chas. Cha-chas are so dumb.
Sean, I have your same commute routine.
Yeah.
With Disgaea 3. I go in the item world and clear about 10 levels, 15 levels. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. And then on the way back home, just level up.
I can drive anywhere in the country I want to, just like Need for Speed the Run. So,
See?
Eat it.
You're in the middle of it all. So,
I am.
So, what have you been playing, Lawman?
Well, the most recent thing that I've been spending my time on is the recent Telltale adventure game Walking Dead, based on the Robert Kirkman comic and not the TV show so much. It is the latest in the Telltale stable of actually they started with Jurassic Park doing kind of a more Heavy Rain style kind of action adventure kind of game where you might have, you know, QTEs or timed kind of a timed element to what you're doing. Walking Dead, I played it on the PC, and I know it's also on Xbox and PS3, and my experience with The Walking Dead, and I don't know if anybody else has, you know, I find that when people talk about this, they kind of talk about The Walking Dead and how it relates to them. But I've only really flipped through the comics. You know, I'd find, you know, here's a section where they've, you know, they're eating this guy, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, and I'd, you know, go to the next page, and But I watched the TV show, and I actually really liked the TV show, and I liked both seasons of it. I know that may not be not be a real popular opinion, but I really did enjoy it. And so that's my background with The Walking Dead. And I think people are really enjoying The Walking Dead, and I myself have found that it's one of the best Telltale entries, I think. So yeah. In The Walking Dead, you play Lee Everett, who is I guess he finds himself in kind of a situation where, of course, he's by himself in a bad situation with zombies, and he finds a little girl named Clementine, and you as the character have to kind of decide how you're going to relate to Clementine and the other characters in the game. And one of the things about this, so if you'd ever played Heavy Rain or if you played the Jurassic Park, the Telltale Jurassic Park, which I will just say I actually really enjoyed Jurassic Park. I know it had its problems, but the difference here, though, is that I would say that the bulk of this game is really focused more on the interactions that you have with the other characters. Yeah. And interestingly, when you start The Walking Dead, it'll ask you whether you want to play in, the easy mode where it'll give you game hints and whether you want to see all the hot spots on the screen. Mm-hmm. And I played with those for a little bit. And I know that both Deagle and Nola, you guys both played this as well, I believe.
Yes.
You got something there on the site just a little bit earlier, and I'm kind of curious to know if you guys changed those settings, like how you played The Walking Dead.
I started on the easy setting and I stuck with it. I just thought it was a good. I liked the feedback that I was getting,
I did too, just because full disclosure, we were kind of playing it in a crunch. Deagle and I, we got the code late, and then it was one of those things where like, well, do we want to review a game that we only have one episode of, especially if we're reviewing it late? Is that really worthwhile? And then we said, look, let's both go home, power through this game, and then we'll have a dialogue about it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to be in a situation where we have to talk the next day and be like, well, got halfway through it before I got stuck. So I played it.
And it's not bad,
and
it probably took you, what, 2-3 hours maybe, right?
Yeah.
Two and a half, yeah. And the funny thing was, I was starting to play it a second time, and I wanted to play a different Lee Everett, but I just couldn't.
Let's talk about that for just a minute. So as you make decisions in this game, so you have dialogue options as you talk to characters, and the easy mode that I was referring to, one of the things that it'll do is as you make dialogue choices, as you interact with people, you have the choice as the character Lee to sort of hide your past from these other characters, and the game, depending on what the setting you've chosen is, the game may tell you, hey, this person is going to remember what you said to them, or they're going to be, they're going to remember that you were loyal, or they're going to remember that you, whatever it is that you did. And so what you're referring to is how when you make these different choices, you sort of get a little bit of a, whereas in other games this might be kind of under the hood sorts of stuff, you kind of get an idea that, okay, this decision that I made is going to impact the story. Mm. And shortly after, you kind of,
I would say, in most games it's in the forefront, like Mass Effect, they really, throw it in your face with the choice.
Yeah, but look how Mass Effect turned out. Nobody liked that. So, but here, I mean, it will change the course of the story. So what you're talking about playing a different Lee is that there are, as you talk to different people about the choices that they made, you actually can end up with, different dynamics, different group dynamics that actually will carry over to different episodes of this game. So this is one of Telltale's episodic games. They've got 5 episodes planned. And I can tell you that some of the decisions that you make, they actually have a kind of a next time on The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And some of the characters that you have chosen to stay with, they show up. They'll have like little preview, like, my God, and it's this guy who you'd stayed with, and it cuts to a shot of him, but the other person is not there. So the game sort of telegraphs this stuff to you, in my opinion, in a little more explicit way. But when I played the game, I sort of started out just to kind of see what it was, but I almost immediately turned off the hot spots, the trigger spots, because it's not as much of a pixel hunt as other games, right. And I kind of felt like, I would like to explore a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But then pretty shortly after, I actually turned off the prompt about so-and-so remembering this or that or the other. Because I didn't really want to peek behind the kimono, really. I kind of wanted to let, you know, right. I kind of wanted to let the story go the way that I would choose to do it. And like you said, you know, there are people who are saying, well, I want to go back and play again and, mm-hmm. and you know, be a...
But I would say, and this is maybe my own rationalization for playing in easy mode, my guilt coming out, I would say that in normal conversations, like everyday conversations, if you are talking to somebody and their face kind of, you know, changes a little bit, that indicates something. And that indication,
they still have that in this game.
They do, but it's not like LA Noir or anything, where you know their face changes subtly, but it's very broad. You know, there's scare. There's probably like, I don't know, maybe 16 at tops, 32 different facial expressions, and I like that because it kind of it allows for articulation beyond just the simple facial expressions in the game.
Yeah, but I think what tends to happen, and I'm just personally in my life, I'm trying to kind of resist against this a little bit, but people have a tendency to want to make the right choice. You know, they want to get the best ending it to turn out a certain way, and they engineer their own, you know, their own version of that story, where I kind of felt like when I played The Walking Dead that I wanted to make the choice that seemed natural to me and then live with the consequences, you know, because the one of the things about The Walking Dead is there's not really, you know, things like The Witcher and games like that, people say, oh, you know, all the choices are gray. And here again, like you're most of the time you're choosing between terrible choices.
Right.
You know, so I didn't really enjoy it. You know, I was like, oh, so-and-so is going to remember this choice that I made. But now I know that, you know, I'm going to, that I'm forming this alliance or whatever. I'm like, I don't really want to know that. So I actually turned that off.
But they are kind of ambiguous about that. They will still remember it. They don't say whether it's a plus or minus, you know, mark. And I do appreciate that. But
I really agree with Jeremy though, because they do tell you it's a plus or a minus. Like, hold on, let me see how I'm going to phrase this without spoiling. There is a character that you meet early on, and he is directly related to the first major decision you have to make.
Yep.
Right. The left or right decision. Right. And I said something to him, and it gave me the prompt that said something along the lines of, he'll remember that you said something bad, basically.
Bad? It said
bad. Yeah. Oh, it didn't say bad, but it was an obvious negative connotation. I obviously said something to upset this character.
Okay.
And then when it came time to make that decision, I made the decision, not that I would make, because the other decision I feel like I would have made more naturally. I made the decision that would have won me brownie points with that character I'd already upset. And it that one decision completely altered the course of the game.
Yeah.
And I feel like without having that prompt there, I might not have picked up on that enough to have.
So what you're saying. And then the other thing that I don't know for me, and maybe I was because it has this filmic cinematic quality about the game. But the one thing I'm not sure if you guys picked up on was sometimes the mood changes for in the NPCs were rather abrupt, where they just kind of changed, you know, tone.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like telegraphed. It was like, wait, why are you angry at me?
I think they did have a little bit of trouble sort of reconciling some of the different branching dialogue choices. I mean, for example, there's a situation where, you know, like, for example, I've already mentioned you meet this little girl, Clementine, who is, by the way, just as cute as a button as far as video game characters go. But you have to sort of tell the other people that you meet, you know, what is your relationship to this girl? Yep. And you can say, well, I'm a stranger, or I'm her dad, or I'm a babysitter. And if you say that you're the babysitter, you know, I came across a situation where, you know, I'd said 2 minutes ago, I'm her babysitter.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, you take your daughter over here. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like there may be a little bit of that where they kind of have some difficulty managing.
You know what? What's funny is I just assumed that there was another character that said that. I thought like he in his mind, he assumed that you were lying or that you weren't telling the truth.
Well, I think they always just call her your daughter, because I've never once alluded to being her father, but they constantly call her my daughter.
Yeah, so I think there's a little bit of that, but by and large, I really felt like they did a really good job with the, you know, with that kind of idea, you know, about relating to other characters, which really I think is as all good zombie stories are, they're not about the zombies, they're about the
people. And the one thing you said, Jeremy, is that about Clementine, I really cared about the characters. I really liked Lee. I like Clementine. I thought they were really interesting. They were developed, and that to me was really kind of pulled me into the game.
And I liked that they didn't telegraph how you're supposed to be feeling about certain things. Because there's one part, again, I'm going to try not to spoil this, but it's kind of towards the end of the episode, where you basically have to, you have to do something that's really uncomfortable.
Yep.
And when they introduce that idea, they introduce it in kind of a slow way. Like, you find this one thing that talks about, you know, something in the past, and then you go and you see something from that picture and you have to interact with it. And Lee's trying not to let on that it's getting to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got his good front, but you as the player know,
mm-hmm.
and that makes you uncomfortable more than it's like, play some moody music and make him make a distorted face because it's uncomfortable. It's like, no, this situation here is uncomfortable and it's making me uncomfortable, but in kind of a cool way that if I was a sociopath, I might not have picked up on that. But because I'm an actual living, breathing human being with a brain, I got that without them having to beat me over the head with it. I think that's something I complain a lot with JRPG, so I wanted to bring that out and say, go Walking Dead for not doing that.
Yeah, they did a good job with that. And the last thing I want to mention about The Walking Dead, and I think we sort of went over this a little bit before, but I think it can't be overstated that they have, I mean, this is the same engine, the same telltale tool, I think they call it, that they've used in previous games. And I think the biggest complaint that most people have had about their previous games, Jurassic Park and Back to the Future, were engine related problems, you know, just hitchiness. And when they did it in Jurassic Park, some of that hitchiness, you know, the engine really wasn't designed for that stuff. And so you would end up, especially where that was a really action based game. I think they've done a much better job adapting that engine for this kind of style. The graphics, again, look really good, a very comic booky sort of look. The characters are animated very well. Like you guys have said, you get a feel for their expressions and things like that. And just in general, the presentation is something that you enjoy. And you don't really think about it too much, which usually when you played some of the other games, it was like, oh, that was kind of hitchy or something weird happened there. And I didn't experience that in this game really at all.
The problem with Telltale, and this is kind of where I approach this with a grain of salt, is that their games have been getting progressively glitchier. And it's almost like a lazy thing, right? Like, they started out with Sam and Max, and people were like, yes, adventure games are back, and Telltale's doing it, and this is their thing. And then they came out with Monkey Island, and they're like, yeah, they're going to keep doing this, and then Strong Bad and all this other stuff. And then it was just, they're the only game in town doing this, and they're just going to keep doing it the same way, and they're going to keep pumping them out. And by the time they got to Back to the Future, it was like, all right, we got to get this out. There's parts where the DeLorean's not there, and you need to use it to solve a puzzle. Well, that's too bad. Just start it over. you're talking to this person, and their eyes aren't there. That, whatever, cool, just put it out there. The fourth episode is completely broken. That's fine. Nobody plays past the third episode anyway because it's boring. And it's just like, by the time Jurassic Park came out, I'm like, fuck it. You know, I've played every single Telltale game up until then, and I didn't want to deal with it anymore. So when we got this one in, I was like, this is going to suck. It's Telltale and zombies. I can't believe I'm doing this. And it's really good.
Right.
And it's like, they, I don't know, Jurassic Park was like a wake-up call for them. Like, shit, we can't just live on our laurels anymore, especially with Double Fine coming out with an adventure game that people care about again.
Right.
And I hope that they keep that forward momentum, because
I don't even like adventure games, and I liked it.
I like adventure games a lot, and it was really depressing me how Telltale had kind of become a cesspool.
Wow, jeez. All right. Well, that's a cesspool. Okay. Moving right along.
Pulling no punches.
Yeah, no. I mean, the views of Sean Nola do not necessarily reflect the views of the other podcast.
You can't play Back to the Future and say that's a quality product. You can't.
You know, I mean, I noticed some of the hitches, but I didn't really have a big problem. I mean, even Jurassic Park. I must be the only guy in the world who actually likes the Jurassic Park game. And, you know, I can recognize its faults, but I'm not going to call them a cesspool, dude.
Like I said, I'm glad that they got their shit together for this one, but
yeah, that is
they,
true.
They have been going way downhill.
That is true.
Speaking of downhill, it's time for trivia. that's a segue, guys. You guys ready?
I'm ready for trivia.
You guys don't seem pumped up enough. You guys,
ready? Yeah, I'm ready.
There we go. Woo-hoo. Question
the
number
fire
one.
Burning in my eyes and the anime flashy background.
Hentai. Number one, everyone remembers Max Payne popping pills in his mouth like peanut M&Ms in the first game. But how many remember the name of the drug being trafficked by the Mafia in that title? Name it. Is it A, Lot 6, B, Nuke, C, Milk Plus, D, Valker, or E, Maxi Cotton?
I know the answer.
Maxi Cotton sounds like a feminine hygiene product.
Blue, why'd you go there?
I like the idea of Milk Plus, but that's not the answer. The answer is Valkyr.
Yes, the answer is indeed Valkyr.
Blue.
Don't group on that one. I haven't played Max Payne.
Valkyr. Yeah, MaxiCotton. I was trying to sound like OxyContin. Blue. Not MaxiPad. Okay, guys, bonus. Name what movies the first three came from. Lot 6, Nuke, and Milk Plus. Those were drugs, fictitious drugs in movies.
Oh, man, which one was Nuke in? I feel like I've seen that recently.
You may have.
Not many movies involving, like, drug runners and shit, dude.
They're not really about drug runners. There's your clue.
Huh.
Okay.
Lot I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go. No idea.
Lot 6, Firestarter, Nuke, RoboCop 2, Milk Plus.
Oh, and don't tell me. Milk Plus is Mallrats.
No.
Yeah.
Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
That ended on a. Oh. Number two. While New York Minute is back for Max Payne 3, Rockstar hasn't mentioned the return of Dead on Arrival mode. What was special about this game variant? A, Max had to finish the entire game on one life. B, players had to work fast to kill foes against a constantly dwindling health bar. C, players only received 7 saves per level. Or D, after beating the game, Max would face the killer suit hitman.
I think I played it mostly on normal, but I'm going to say one life.
Yeah, I'm going to say one life also.
One life to live. Blue's favorite
soap. I do not watch soaps. Just okay. Well, besides wrestling. But anyway. I'm actually going to say the health bar decreasing throughout the stage.
Yeah, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Correct answer, C, 7 lives or 7 saves per level.
That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, that was. Lucky number 7. Number 3. Well, US gamers will be dropping real money on Diablo 3's auction house, players in what country won't be able to buy in-game goods because of strict anti-gambling laws? Is it A, Canada, B, South Korea, C, England, or D, Deutschland, Germany?
I think it's Germany.
I'm going to go with Germany, too. Those guys are tight asses.
Yeah, I agree.
Jawohl. Correct answer, B, South Korea.
No.
Shit.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because they had some weird thing about StarCraft with that.
Yeah. You can't say that's right, Sean. That's not worth any bonus points. Number 4, which is not one of the classes, character classes found in Diablo 3. A, Demon Hunter, B, Sorceress, C, Witch Doctor, or D, Wizard?
I'm going to go with A.
Yeah.
Demon
Hunter.
I'm trying to remember.
Monster Hunter was in there.
Monster.
I'm trying to remember from when Sage was talking about Diablo 3 a couple of shows back, but I guess it was a couple of months ago, so I'm just going to go with A.
Correct answer, B, Sorceress.
Oh, crap. That would have been a good one.
That was in the original game.
It would be the
Diablo
2.
Yeah, Diablo 2, sorry. Number 5. Thanks, Jeremy, with the save on that one. C2. Fire. Oh, excuse me. I'm playing a little bit of Battleship in the middle of our podcast. But if you're looking to play Battleship the game, you better know that Double Helix was the developer of the title. Which of the following games doesn't carry the studio's DNA? See what I did there? Double Helix DNA. A, Silent Hill Homecoming. B, Front Mission Evolved. C, Green Lantern Rise of the Manhunters. D, The Outfit. Or E, G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra. Not the.
It could be two of them. I'm going to go with Green Lantern.
I'm going to go with Front Mission Evolved.
Sound like a 9-year-old man waking up, Jeremy.
I don't want to get another one wrong, but I'm going to.
Guess the outfit.
The outfit.
Correct answer. The outfit.
Yes.
Oh, shit. Got a
50 chance.
So the lawman came through with a high score.
All by myself. That's right.
Sing it. Sing All by Myself, Blue. Yeah.
By myself.
Okay, that was good.
I wanna be.
How about a bonus question?
Yes, indeed.
Keeping it on tune. In tune as well.
The spine. Not only does it help humans walk upright, but it also allows us to tell exactly what game we're pulling off of our shelves. 99.9% of retail home console games have the name on the game, the name of the game on the side of the game's case. But there is one PlayStation 2 game that shipped without its name on the spine. Name that game.
I don't know, but Fuel, it's upside down and drives me fucking nuts.
Which one?
Fuel. F-U-E-L, Fuel.
Oh, it's no, no, you're down. Thinking of Loof.
Oh, shit. I'm playing.
Yeah, the choices are A, Firefighter FD-18, B, City Crisis, C, The King of Route 66, or D, Catwoman.
Shit, I don't know this one. Damn, Bill.
I'm going to say City Crisis.
Was that the helicopter game?
Because I think they'd be too embarrassed.
City Crisis, that was the helicopter game?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just the only one that in my head I can't see a logo for. Although Firefighter's logo would be difficult to put on a spine, I think.
Shit, I'm going to go with Route 66.
Jeremy?
Catwoman.
Meow.
Meow. Halle Berry, meow. The correct answer is Nola got it. B, City Crisis.
I own that.
This is one thing I actually, you know, I was going through some PS2 games at a secondhand store, and I saw this one game with just the PlayStation 2 logo at the top and nothing on the side of it. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So I pulled it off of the shelf, and it was City Crisis, and it looked kind of like the old Maxis PC game, SimCopter.
Oh, that game.
Yeah, and yep. I was thinking, okay, I might need to get this, and I flipped on to IGN, and it's got like a 4.8. I'm like, shit! Because my old copy of SimCopter got completely screwed up.
It was more like Desert Strike without all the fun. Because there's no guns in it.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Replacing guns,
I just buy all of my games in crappy, terrible condition at GameStop. So all games look like they've got those crappy cartoon bros on them. And that's what they all look like to me.
That has been your bonus question.
That was good. League. Good one.
Why, thank you.
We got some mailbag questions. We got one from Niv Giggles. Niv Giggles.
Oh, Niv Giggles.
Niv Giggles. The Vox Verge. I can't speak. Sean, you gave me the virus. Vox Verge Polygon has hired a lot of writers lately, and now at least 10 guys, assuming they each make $50,000 and have programmers because their site looks kind of crappy now, A office, phone bills, etc. It's not unreasonable to think they will have close to $1 million a year in expenses, dollars. U.S. dollars. My question is, what do you think their business plan is with IGN and 1UP cutting people in half? No, I put that in. What does this group know what others don't? Can an internet site about video games make enough money to cover it all?
I've actually talked to one of them about some of their business.
Yes.
Well, first of all, $50,000 a year, if they were making that, I would leave my job and go work for them. They're probably making closer to 30.
Oh my god. Wait. The guys like Crescente?
I don't know exactly how the writers they're hiring now.
He had pretty snazzy shoes on. He wasn't wearing the type of shoes that a guy makes $30,000 makes.
Well, part of the thing that they're doing though is, like he says, an office, phone bills, etc. They don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a central location. They're all working remotely from their homes.
Okay.
So that's going to get rid of some of their expenses right there. As far as their crappy site design, they're pretty proud of their site design. So, but there are programmers working for them. But they've got some new system in place that helps them kind of have a unified look for their articles.
Yeah, they're pretty proud of their CMS from what I hear.
Yeah.
CSS?
CMS.
Their content management system.
Oh, okay. I thought the actual food.
Yeah, so, but yes, they do have programmers doing that. But part of their thing, yeah, like I said, is that they don't have a central office, so they're cutting expenses that way. I don't know that they really have a solid plan going forward to make money, though, which is what concerns me.
So did they get an angel investor?
Yeah, well, so
yeah.
Vox was an existing company, and they were looking to expand and have a gaming site, because they're like an entertainment media site, kind of like a, I guess kind of like IGN, really, because IGN does more than video games. We forget that sometimes.
Yeah, they got porn stars.
Or yeah. UGO.
I don't even know if UGO's still around, are they?
Yes.
Yes, they are.
Oh. but anyway, the idea was that they were trying to expand, and they just, hey, you guys wanted to make a video game site, why don't you make ours for us? So I don't know if Vox has some system in place to make money, but I think that
I'm pretty sure they must have a business plan, and because you know, no one just gives you money, and they must have the numbers crunched.
Here's the thing: is I think they're going to have a massive layoff a year from now.
Oh yeah,
they are hiring.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree with that, because I think, you know, you got plans and you got reality. Yeah.
Here's my take on this, because there's one way to make money by putting content like that on the internet, right? Ad revenue, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, their plan, I mean, there may be some, you know, overarching, you know, media company business plan, but for these guys specifically, all of the people that they've added, they're all people who have branded themselves personally as writers in some way. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is they're accruing a stable of people who have a following, or who have a, you know, a cachet with mm-hmm. them, in their attempt just to draw people to get eyeballs and clicks on their site. I mean, that's the only thing mm-hmm. they can do, right? I mean, ad yeah. revenue is the only way to do it. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about IGN and 1UP and some of those places cutting people, the interesting thing to me about that is that they are always cutting people and then hiring people again. Like even just today, you know, they're hiring mm-hmm. you know, more people at IGN, and so they're just churning through people. And I sometimes wonder, are they churning out some of the higher paid people to bring in some lower mm. paid people? You know, I don't know if that has something to do with it, but
I'm sure
I don't know that there's
a
yeah, and I don't know that there's a lot more complicated to it than that. But I mean, the idea behind the Polygon group is that every one of the people that they add to that team is somebody who is recognizable individually, and they're hoping that through that they will be able to draw the audience that they need to make it sustainable. And that, I guess that's the only thing
yeah.
that I could really say about that.
But the thing is, so you get these, we'll say it's 10 guys. It's more than that at this point. But let's say there's these 10 guys. They draw you in. Fox is in your RSS reader. You're reading their articles all the time. And then they lose them, but it's become part of your daily routine. Right. Mm-hmm. I still think people are going to go there. And I think that's going to be the worry, is they've hired so many people.
Look at Joystick. They've lost you know, a number of their writers, and I think their ratings are about the same.
Yeah.
Their Alexa hasn't changed at all.
I mean, I just don't see this being sustainable. I don't see... I would love for it to be, because they seem like all good people.
Right.
And you know what? And they're smart people too.
I mean,
I don't want to put it past them either, because they, I mean, especially, you know, Chris Grant, Brian Crescente, the people who are heading that thing up, they are smart people who have managed teams of writers before and managed sites themselves before. I'm not willing to say that they're, you know, doomed to some kind of, you know, giant, you know, bubble or anything like that. But I think we can at least give them a little bit of credit for their.
Oh yeah.
You know.
I think what they're putting out is going to be great. I just don't think it's going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if they put like Amazon affiliate links to at the bottom of their reviews, you know,
I'm not sure that would cover it all.
Yeah.
Well, never know how much influence.
The tricky thing with affiliate links is you have to put yourself in a situation where people are going to want to buy immediately. I don't think people read reviews and then buy things. I think the reason Cheap Ass Gamer works through affiliate links is because it is specifically made to make you want to spend money.
Yep.
As opposed to a review site, which is actually kind of the opposite. Review sites are kind of set up to either validate the purchase you've already made, or to keep you from making a purchase that you would have made.
Yep.
I don't think people, it's very rare that people are just trolling traipsing around a review site, and then they see, wow, this game I never heard about got an A++. I better go buy that right now. You know?
Yeah. But a lot of our readers bought System Mechanic based on my review, so I'm told.
Maybe there's an Amazon link that we would have gotten money, but I kind of doubt it.
No, I missed that opportunity.
I feel like when you see a positive review that you weren't expecting, you research after that. You don't.
Yeah. Next question comes from Oddjob. I did a little research on this. In the Toy Soldiers DLC review, I said that the Xbox Dash was so slow to boot. Now some people are saying that MS is adding more ads, which will probably slow things down even more. Why don't you think more people are talking about this? And I, with my Xboxes, I measured the amount of time to play a XBLA game. Because one of the things I noticed is when the Xbox boots, I'm talking about the most recently played game, every once in a while that won't come up and you'll just get, you know, blank screen. And so if you played, say, Toy Soldiers and then you go back in, you want to play that again, it takes some time to kind of load up for one reason or another. And so I timed that, and it ranged from 29 to about 34 seconds, which is pretty lengthy. So you guys, why do you think more people aren't talking about this?
I think they are talking about it, but nobody's going to do what it takes to really get anything done. And that, what it would take to get something done is to stop subscribing to Xbox Live.
No, I think I think Microsoft is working on the situation. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are two schools of thought on cross media bars or dashboards or whatever. You have PlayStation, where people complain that you have a system update every week.
Right.
And you have Xbox, where you get is it two or four a year?
Not two or three.
It's been
with some smaller ones in there.
Plentiful lately, maybe three.
They're seasonal. But it's basically they have a set number per year, and that's what you get.
Mm-hmm.
So when they redesign the dashboard, yeah, it's a serious problem. But in order to keep people from complaining about having to update their system every week, they're going to have to wait for that solution to get put in place. And since it's not something that's breaking people's systems, it's just irritating them for 40 seconds.
Right.
It's not exactly going to be something they're going to push out ahead of schedule. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think the last year at E3, they put a dashboard update. Was it in the middle of E3 or right after E3?
Right after, yeah.
Yeah, so I imagine that next month there will be a dashboard update that will take care of it.
But, well, I don't think it will take care of it, Sean, because one of the things they have been, like Oddjob saying, is they plan to put more ads in. And if you look at the current interface, it's set up so to maximize the ad space. Like, you can tab over. And each tab itself carries, I don't know, up to six ads. And then you can, you know, move in those, and there's even more ads. And so you have layers of them. And all that takes some time to load up.
But if they re-engineer the delivery mechanism so that it's not...
cached, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Possibly.
I mean, that's all they have to do. Like, okay, so they've decided this last release, they decided X much ad space, right?
Right.
And then... obviously, they must have
even all those JPEGs. You got, you know, how many, you know, six ads per page, 8, 48. Then you got all those JPEGs eating up your memory. Then you got to flush that out when you boot a game.
Can I ask you guys a question? How often do you use those tabs? Because once they rolled out that new menu, I could not find a single thing. I use the home button for I might browse over to my friends and see who's on, but I use that home button every time I go to my quick menu, load up the game that I want, check my active down. I do everything through that button. I never use those menus if I can avoid it.
I wish they would have just made a completely customizable UI for it. If you want to use the old school 2005 blades, you can.
Take a breath real quick because you're turning into a robot.
No, here's why they won't do that, because that they are getting eyes on the ads, and if you allow people to circumvent that, you're not getting views, and if you're not getting views, those aren't turning into, you know, sales on, you know, XBLA. Those aren't impressions.
And there's also a brand management problem there too. If you let people look at outdated brand stuff, then when you kind of subliminally slip stuff into TV shows or ads or whatever, the people aren't connecting with that anymore. And that there's a lot of money that goes into that kind of stuff.
So again, to the question about using the menus, I mean, individually, are each of you bothered by the loading time of the different screens? Be honest with yourself now. I mean, as people who are power users of these consoles, people who are using them all the time, it doesn't sound like anybody here is, you know, really foaming at the mouth about this either.
I'm much more fond of the PS3's decision, where you have the ads, but they're kind of innocuous. They're up in the corner, and if you want to see them, they're there, and they just don't, not so much in your face.
It kind of has its own problem too, though. I'm seeing a lot of spinny little loading icons too in my cross media bar. So,
Okay.
Well, I think PS3's problem is more with how they've fucked up their store somehow. There are too many.
Yeah, their store's such a mess. Yes.
Yeah. You remember when it used to just be you went to the store, you like, do you want a PSP game or PS3 game.
This week
it's just new releases.
Right. And this week I looked at something, it was in the wrong category, and it's just kind of a mess. It's like they don't even know what they're doing half the time.
I mean, it was so easy before. It's like, here's everything that's come out ever in chronological order. That's yeah. really all you
need. Well, it's easy when you have 30 products, but now, I mean, they've launched, you know, what, three new, you know, PS Minis, right. You know, Vita, PS Plus is a new thing. Hey, I mean, the
you
more
know
they...
what I really wish they had on the store, on the PS, because I've downloaded 1,300 pieces of information, and now I have to re-download that to get it on the Vita, and now I have to scroll through and try to remember kind of when I bought that. Over the last yeah. 4 years,
they need their storefront to be more searchable.
Yeah,
so. I think it's plenty searchable. It's just not super intuitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, what really sucks is games that aren't on the store anymore, but you've downloaded. You can still download those,
yep.
but then it's like no. Rob said, you
just
have
gotta
to
go fishing for them.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to go remember when you bought it. That's what I had to do with Phantasy Star Portable 2. Is that's not on the store anymore, and I wanted to play it, and so I'm like, well. And that came out, what, like March 2010, maybe?
Yeah, they pulled a lot of the PSP titles because there was some exploit with that. So, yep.
Yeah. I gotta love it.
All right, yeah. That's a show. You got four grumpy good dudes.
Oh, you don't want to see any more questions?
Sure. Why don't we do, what do you want, Sega Holic or King Missile?
Well, Sega Holic, they're asking for Vita talk. We talked about the Vita. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
You're getting a little bit of regret.
No, I tried the PS Vita display demo over at GameStop again.
Sure.
It took me about 3 or 4 minutes to actually get into Wipeout 2048 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just sitting there waiting for the game to load up, and then I'm waiting for I had to skip past. Some of the developer names at the beginning or whatever.
Launch,
and it just takes too damn long.
At launch, it was really bad, but there was a patch that reduced it. So you're waiting about 30 seconds for a level to load. And so it did improve. But yeah. But at launch, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I pick up the demo unit and, you know, I want to play a game and I have to wait for that to load. And then I have to wait for the individual stage to load. It was about 3 minutes. And I was nearly like, screw this and put it down.
No, the full game that's updated, it's not nearly as bad as that.
Mm. Yep. Anyway, King Missile asked, stop being so damn objective and have fun for a second. Will you? Could you hear the emotion in my voice right there? Who do you want to conquer E3, and who do you want to see publicly ridiculed?
Sean, you go first.
I want Sega to conquer E3 by announcing they're going to release Phantasy Star Online 2 for the Vita in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see them publicly ridiculed if they don't.
Have you tried the beta?
I couldn't get into the beta.
Sorry.
I tried the character creator.
Mm-hmm. How was that?
I created a character.
Did it look like you? Did it look like someone you wanted to be?
Looked like a fat dude, because you can make fat people in that game.
Really? I want to be a fat dude. Blue, who you want to see conquer E3?
You know, honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing Nintendo do pretty well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind for them giving me a reason to really want.
Are they the underdogs this year?
Yeah,
coming in, they are. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, the Wii U is kind of. I mean, a lot of people weren't too hot on it, and
No,
I'm they really need to hit a home run with it at E3, otherwise it's not going to be pretty later this year.
Yeah, because I mean the 3DS sales have been dropping in the U.S. They're still picking up in Japan because they basically everybody bought it when Monster Hunter came out. Now that they have them, they're buying games for them, and it's great. But there hasn't been that title here in the States yet, and Mario didn't do it for them, so they need the Wii U to be something.
Yeah, I would sort of like to see, you know, Sony has recently announced their PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, which I think it's probably safe to say that it's being sort of roundly ridiculed, I think. People are like,
I'm super excited
for
it.
I am too. Well, that's the thing, is like, from what I can see of it, it looks like the best possible ripoff of Super Smash Brothers that we could get from Sony.
Okay.
So that, and then, you know, God of War Ascension is out now, and it's multiplayer, and it's like, oh, God of War doesn't need multiplayer, I don't want to see that, blah, 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 blah. Also, you know, Vita's well is running a little bit dry in software. They had a great launch in terms of software. I'd like to see more coming from them in terms of, you know, like you just mentioned, Monster Hunter. I'd like to see that, you know, hit the Vita. You know, lots of good stuff that they can potentially do there. I'd really like to see the PlayStation Vita, Sony, you know, do well. I mean, it's a system that I've already got, and I'd just like to have more. So I have a little bit of a vested interest in that, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
And then I would actually like to see Deagle publicly ridiculed for his appearance in a Kickstarter documentary.
That will happen.
It's just my prediction. You know, I don't know whether anything is is going to happen there. But yeah.
You'll be the first to chime in.
Yeah.
How shiny is him?
Give it a 1-star review on Netflix.
real quick though, since you touched on the Vita, one thing I'm going to be interested to see in at E3 is it seems like in Japan, the Vita is kind of being pushed as a free-to-play system with, you know, Phantasy Star Online and Gundam. And then there was one other really big property that they're making a free-to-play MMO for the Vita on. And it seems interesting that if they continue in that direction, if they'll bother to bring that over to the States. Because, I mean, that's sort of like a four-letter word here. You know, you say, oh, free-to-play MMO, and people are like, ooh, that's pay-to-win, bad stuff. And it's a field where a lot of stuff's changing and a lot of stuff is happening. It's actually a really exciting kind of genre to check out. But a lot of people just ignore it based on past experience.
Wouldn't RC Motorstorm?
Motorstorm RC.
That was free to play. I mean, not
that
massively.
That was free because of a sponsorship.
But you could buy additional cars.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it had that element.
I don't think people saw it as a free-to-play game because you paid for it in every other territory other than the U.S.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that's overthinking it a little bit. I mean, I'm not sure that the average consumer really thinks about, oh, well, the Europeans, screw them. I'm going to get this for free. I think that's a good point. And I am a little more, I guess, bullish on free-to-play. I mean, there are a few, not necessarily Vita, but there are, I haven't really given free-to-play a second thought, but, you know, coming out a little later, we've got the new MechWarrior game coming out, which I'm totally stoked for. There's the, this is all on PC, but there's the game from the Sins of a Solar Empire people. I think it's Ironclad is coming out with Sins of a Dark Age. That's going to be free to play. I mean, this year, I think, you know, and, you know, far be it for me to say this is the year of free to play, but I think we're making a transition here. I think that, you know, that the more people have an opportunity to actually play these kinds of games, I think the less they will tend to gripe about it because they've had the experience. I think it's the kind of thing that's easy to criticize from, you know, from afar or from, you know, the standpoint of, oh, it's something from Facebook. But I think once you play one and you enjoy it, I think it's pretty clear that that people can really enjoy that stuff, and I don't see why that couldn't happen here.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. We always come out at E3, and we always visit the Nexon booth, and we always come out with a smile on our face, and then nothing ever happens with that. It's. I would like to see something change in the way Americans view that stuff. You know,
yeah.
We don't realize Nexon made a move to buy EA. That's huge. You know, the fact that they can even contemplate that is.
Wasn't that just a rumor?
It was a rumor that it was going through. Nexon is looking to buy somebody, and they looked at EA and decided it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, and I think free-to-play is just one of those chicken or egg things. I mean, I think the more exposure we get to it, the more successful it'll be. Can't be successful till you get more exposure, but you know, it's just one of those things I think is going to creep into the. I think it's already in the public mind, but the general public doesn't think about it in terms of, oh, it's free-to-play. They just think about it in terms of, oh, it's a game. And I think the people who really have problems with it are the same vocal minority that pretty much bitch about every other thing anyway. So as soon as that gets a little more acceptance, you know, in those circles, I think that those barriers will probably crumble.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now you can end the show.
Oh, well, you were the host.
Oh, okay. Now I can end the show. So if you'd like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest checking out www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. If you like our opinions on gaming, pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. I am Sean Nola with two N's. Robert Allen is @tech_gaming. Sage, who is not here, is @samurage. The DLC heel Blue Swim is @blueswim. And Jeremy Lawman Lamont is @jeremy_lamont. That's with no E in between the M and the Y. I know some people spell it.
It's weird. I talked about it last time. People spell it with G's and O's and I don't even know what. But you can find me. I'm out there.
Joramoy. don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. This is probably going to be the last time I say this, but there's two Tech Gamings. The one that has the new episode is the one you want. The one that doesn't is our old feed. You can listen to old episodes.
With Tiger.
Yeah. by the way, I have not been on the show since he made this announcement. Tiger is getting married.
Yes. To a woman. So
congratulations to him.
And tell the way he proposed.
Yeah, he hacked a Zelda ROM so that when you go and talk to the old man, it says it's dangerous to go alone. Marry Adam, and then she had to pick yes or no, and then if she picked yes, he gave her.
No. Yeah.
Do you think he coded it if she had picked no?
I don't know. You can find it on YouTube.
Probably just crashes.
Yeah. Exactly.
It gives her the sword. And she just continues playing Zelda.
Playing the game. Never mind. That was nothing.
You have half a heart for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
That's kind of poetic.
Let's call Adam and have him travel back in time and program it that way. Adam. Yep, that's it. Facebook. We're on that. We're gonna start doing more stuff with that soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
Tech gaming is free to play on Facebook.
Yes. Don't play a tech gaming game on Facebook. You play it by going to EA's Facebook page and leaving angry comments.
And it's free.
I didn't want to say IGN because we got in trouble for that.
We did.
We did?
Yeah, that's why we're not on Metacritic anymore.